Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio here in East County. Today we open with a very important interview with Peter Anderson, Sierra Club's leader locally, regarding a proposed housing development along the Highway 94 corridor and what a dangerous situation this would be from a fire evacuation standpoint. And driving home his point, just hours after our interview was held, there were three fires along Highway 94 and vehicles that were trapped for a short time, but thankfully firefighters were able to put the blaze out. So be sure to stay tuned for that important story and what you can do about it. There's some good news today from a water standpoint. All this rainfall has replenished local reservoirs. Find out how your community reservoir measures up on today's show. A mountain lion suspected in an attack on a boy in a Rancho Peñasquitos preserve has been killed. Stay tuned for details. And then on People Power, hear about a basketball tournament being held in Lemon Grove in memory of Trevon Harris, a young student killed by a car, and how Lemon Grove residents are setting up scholarship funds in his memory to help other young athletes. On Green Seed, hear why Lake Morena residents are organizing to oppose a solar energy facility. And in Santee, find out about a new smoking ban in public parks. On Destination East County, we'll have all the most fun and festive events coming up, including La Mesa's Flag Day Parade this weekend, as well as outdoor concerts, movies, and more. Hear how you can donate blood at the Viejas Blood Drive coming up in Alpine. And learn about Race Amity Day events in Lemon Grove. Now, if you like counting sheep, we'll tell you how to do that at the Bighorn Sheep Annual Count in Anza-Borrego Desert State Park. From Public News Service, we'll have some news about restorative juvenile justice programs in California. Learn why La Mesa's Farmer's Market may soon end, and as the weather heats up, hear where you can find cool zones across our region, including here in East County. We also have updates on a beef recall and a reminder from public health officials about vaccinations if you're traveling this summer. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio here in East County. Today, my very special guest is Peter Anderson, and Peter is the chair of the San Diego Sierra Club. Peter, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Miriam.
On June 26th, the San Diego supervisors are going to be voting on some amendments to the general plan that would make it possible for them to approve massive housing projects in rural fire-prone areas. And that includes here in East County, the first one coming up is the Otay Ranch Village 14 planning area, which is in the Proctor Valley area around Jamul. Peter, tell us a little bit about the size of that project and if it were approved, what that would include.
Well, the project is proposed for around 1,200 homes, some shopping, and pavement of Proctor Valley Road to the north and to the south of the project, from Chula Vista up to Jamul. And this project, we're opposing, the Sierra Club is opposing, for many reasons. But at the top of our list is fire safety.
Yeah. Now, these 1,200 homes, I understand, would house about 4,000 people.
Thereabouts. It's always a little bit hard to predict how many people are going to live in a home. But that's a good round number.
Now, put it in perspective. How many people live in Jamul?
About 6,000 live in Jamul, so that's about a 70-80% increase in the population.
Yeah, that's huge. Now, I will say, we have covered this Highway 94, which is the main evacuation route, for years. And I've had many, 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 many stories where the road was blocked completely for 6 hours, 10 hours, 12 hours, sometimes even as long as 3 days if a big truck overturned, a motorhome towing something got stuck. There's a Border Patrol crossing that brings people in from Tecate that often backs up.
there's a casino with traffic jams, and there's a high school right there. Now, do you have some statistics for us? It's easy to say it's a fire hazard, but tell us what data you have to back that up.
Well, CAL FIRE says the Hamul area, zip code 91935, is in the top 1% of risk for evacuation from a wildfire. That's a higher number, a more dangerous location than was Paradise.
Paradise, where 80-some people burned to death and were trapped, and basically the entire town burned down because the fire came through so
and
fast.
And they had very good evacuation plans up there that obviously failed in the case of a fast-moving wildfire.
Now, let's put this in perspective. So if Hamul is in the 1%, the worst 1% in the entire state of California for wildfire evacuation, what was the ranking before this fire up in Paradise?
It was in the 4% to 5% range. So there were six exit routes out of Paradise. There are two exit routes out of Proctor Valley.
And one of those is just a surface street, Proctor Valley Road, that they're going to run through.
Right, south into Chula Vista. And what's really interesting about the environmental impact report is they have a very good plan for the evacuation of those 4,000 residents. But there is not one mention in the report that anybody else ever visits or lives in Hamul.
And this is a terribly fire-prone area. I will say that during the Harris fire, I drove 94 twice, and I want to talk about what that was like. I was at Barrett Junction the morning the Harris fire began, about an hour after it started. And there was this massive wall of smoke you could see from where it had started over the hill in Potrero, and all of a sudden it just exploded. Turns out it was fueled by 100-mile-an-hour hurricane-force winds, and the fire came roaring down the mountain toward us. And literally, the guys on the bullhorn said, evacuate, evacuate now. And someone shouted, run for your life, and everybody did, even like Hell's Angel bikers were, you know, hauling out of there. I got in my car with my photographer, and we were speeding back down the highway, and you could see the fire eating up the highway behind you. It was the scariest thing, and I couldn't imagine trying to get out. If there was a traffic jam, we were the first car out, I mean, you know, and it was still very, very dangerous.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that. The exact fire you're talking about, the Harris fire.
Yeah, 2007.
Burned right through the proposed project.
Wow.
So, and much of this project burnt in 2003. So it's not a question of if fire will come to Proctor Valley. It's only a question of when it will come.
Yes, every fire chief I've talked to says the exact same thing, Peter. And during that fire, which burned for days, I went behind fire lines in Potrero to do some reporting. When I got ready to come out, there was a problem with a sniper shooting vehicles the way I had gotten into Potrero. So I went to the roadblock, down 94, and I said, any chance they're going to open this? And the guy says, well, we just let the first vehicle, a CHP car, through your press. If you want to take a chance, go ahead. So we did. Scariest thing I ever saw. Everything was black. It was like a moonscape. Now, parts of this, there's probably a 1,000-foot drop, you know, going through these kind of rocky hills and mountains and canyons. The guardrails had burned off. Half the roadway had burned away, so we had to go on the wrong side to make our way down. And everything as far as you could see was burned. And again, this is the road people are supposed to use
Absolutely.
To evacuate.
And it's the cumulative evacuation impacts of Dalzuro, Potrero, Tecate, Hamul. Again, the EIR just says that there's a plan to stage an evacuation of these new residents.
Well, how? You can't
But it does, of course, and it doesn't mention that there's anybody else there. If you look at their traffic report, it's really interesting. They say many areas along 94 are F-rated. That's the worst rating.
Yeah.
And then they say, therefore, putting additional cars in that road would have no impact because it wouldn't change the ratings.
Oh, my gosh.
They'd still be
insane.
F.
Yeah, it's also, just in terms of traffic accidents, it's also among the most dangerous highways in the region. And in terms of where to evacuate, you have a border fence that may soon become a 30-foot border wall down there. I know during the Harris fire, there were people who were trapped, and the only way they got out was they literally pulled up a stepladder and climbed over the border fence into Mexico and came back, and you won't be able to do that. And of course, now you need a visa or passport to come back into the U.S., and it may soon be a 30-foot wall, so you can't do that anymore. So really, 94 is truly the only major route.
Right. Well, Sierra Club believes in smart growth. Smart growth is SDSU West, which is building housing on the old Qualcomm Stadium site.
Yeah, that was going to be my devil's advocate question. Of course, on the other hand, the county supervisors, in all fairness now, they are under the gun. There's a state mandate coming down that says you got to build more housing, you got to build more affordable housing. Oh, and by the way, we don't like your climate change report. That's been tossed out in court. You got to do more about that. So they've got a lot of things that are pulling them in conflicting directions. So if you were a county supervisor and you had to figure out how to meet all those mandates and not have people burn up in places like Hamul, how do you do it?
You do it by approving smart developments. Smart developments along Otay Mesa and the border, smart developments along transit stations, vacant lots in the inner city. Qualcomm Stadium site, as I mentioned, fabulous place to build 5,000 new housing units. So you can do smart growth. Smart growth is not building mini mansions in a fire-prone area.
In Chaparral, we might add. This is not a river valley. No.
The Board of Supervisors are trying to comply with a state-mandated climate action plan. Well, Sierra Club is now defeated in court for the third time, their climate action plan. And this would only create more problems with their climate action plan because this would introduce more vehicle trips, which are huge contributors to greenhouse gas.
The essential problem with the climate change plan that the county had is the courts said it put too much emphasis on building more freeways and not enough emphasis on mass transit. And that's another whole issue. And yet they're wanting to put more sprawl developments in areas like Proctor Valley, in some areas up in North County, Newland Sierra,
the Valiano project. There's actually about six or seven sprawl projects that are not smart growth.
And we should note they haven't even fixed the freeways in places where they already approved sprawl developments.
Well,
look at Santee that's got all these new sprawl developments that have been approved or in the pipeline, and now they're saying they're taking away money for Highway 52 for other things, other kinds of transit projects instead of doing both. So there seems to be no guarantee that they're ever going to even do whatever roadway improvements
The judge held that the climate action plan was illegal and for many reasons, but at the centerpiece of it was that they were doing out of country mitigations, which he said were undetectable and unenforceable. You really don't know if you buy land in Peru whether it really is being used as mitigation property, and if in violation of it, there's no way to enforce it under Peruvian law.
Well, exactly, and there's absolutely zero benefit to anybody in San Diego County. Even if they did it, maybe it offsets greenhouse gases, but it does nothing about the traffic.
We have the sixth dirtiest air in America. Now, a lot of it you can't see because it's ozone, which is an invisible gas. But we have the sixth least healthy air in the United States. Therefore, if you do a good climate action plan that prevents greenhouse gases and other pollutants from escaping, you really solve two problems: the global climate crisis, at least on the local level, and you reduce bad air for San Diego County residents.
Now, another problem, we've been talking about the fire danger, but that's not the only problem with this project down in Proctor Valley. There are also some environmental concerns. Tell us about those.
There's pretty grave concerns. First of all, you take out Chaparral, which is a great collector of carbon. None of the plans account for the fact that carbon sequesters as much greenhouse gas as a forest. So that's number one. Secondly, there are a lot of very sensitive habitats down there.
Yeah, there are some preserves right nearby.
Well, not only right nearby, right in the proposed project, there are three multiple species conservation areas, which were supposed to be preserved in perpetuity. The multiple species conservation plan was the grand bargain between developers and conservation. Yeah, it says you can develop here, but in other locations, you have to preserve the land.
What are some of the sensitive or endangered species that could go extinct here or be negatively impacted?
Well, there's a bunch. I'm not sure I can list all of them, but it's the keynote checker spot butterfly, least bells vireo, the gnatcatcher, eagles, and sensitive plants like California thornmint and dehesa beargrass.
Yeah, we don't have very many eagles left in San Diego County. I've written on that before.
Well, we don't have much chaparral left. It's a very narrow band that runs along the coast that is increasingly threatened because of development.
And again, listeners, on June 26th, the supervisors are going to be considering amendments to the general plan that would allow massive housing development in the Hamul-Proctor Valley area, Otay area, and could open the door for similar projects in North County, such as Newland Sierra, in the future. And these are projects proposed in the most fire-prone areas of San Diego County.
The 26th hearing is only on Otay 14. There'll be subsequent hearings for other projects. But you are quite right. It is a big sprawl project that's fire-inducing, traffic-inducing, evacuation-preventing, and is a threat to our habitat. And again, these are amendments to the general plan, and the Board of Supervisors are trying to force through excessive amendments to the general plan.
We're speaking with Peter Anderson with the Sierra Club about the fire dangers and environmental dangers posed by this proposed housing project that could bring up the 4,000 new residents along Highway 94 that is already rated by CAL FIRE as among the worst 1% areas in the state for evacuation during a wildfire, even worse than Paradise. Peter, what else would you like our listeners to know?
Exactly. Well, Sierra Club wants smart growth in housing. And smart growth is where jobs are located, where there's easy access to work through bicycles or walking or short car trips. But we want to oppose stupid growth. And stupid growth is sprawl growth where the homes are located far from the places of work. It exacerbates our already horrible traffic problem. It puts at greater risk for fire. It destroys endangered species. This project was proposed in 1992. And 1992, in terms of climate action, is about as relevant as 1492 was in terms of climate action. Most of the climate change that is going to really imperil the U.S. economy, our coastlines, our weather systems, has occurred since 1992.
Yeah, and also after 1992, we've had a few other major things happen here, like the 2003 Cedar Fire and the 2007 firestorms, including the Harris Fire, that burned this exact area, and at the time were rated the two of the three worst wildfires in California history.
Right.
We've since had even worse ones, including notably Paradise, where over 80 people were killed and an entire town burned, and it was rated less dangerous for evacuation than the Hamul area where they want to put this
exactly.
project.
Exactly. And I must add, for North County residents, Scripps Ranch is also in the top 1% in terms of the poor evacuation potential of it. So we have to be concerned about all of these communities. There has to be a new paradigm. And I think Hassad, the new director of Sandag, has some very imaginative transportation plans that include high-speed rail, Escondido to downtown in 15 minutes. Now, this is 15, 20
wow.
years off. But we have to start thinking about rail, express buses, and we have to think about trying to create transportation systems that get people out of their cars, create bike paths and walkable communities. This is the future. We're really envisioning a project like Otay Ranch, which is really kind of a 19th century kind of concept of a project, not a 21st century concept.
Yeah. Well, transportation is a whole other issue. We'd love to have you back, Peter,
to
talk about that one.
June 26th, Board of Supervisors, if you're interested in Otay 14, a sprawl project in the East County, come to the County Board of Supervisors meeting.
Very good. And if you missed some of this, you can tune in on our site, eastcountymagazine.org. We are going to be putting the podcast of this interview up, as well as we have articles on the project that we'll link to. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, listeners, just a few hours after that interview with Peter Anderson from the Sierra Club was recorded, three fires did break out along Highway 94 in the Dulzura area near Hamul, and the entire highway was shut down for several hours while firefighters battled the blazes. Traffic ground to a complete halt, and some motorists were actually trapped between the fire and the road closure, and CHP had to go in and rescue them. Fortunately, firefighters were able to put these fires out. But what if there had been Santa Ana winds and it had gotten out of control? this really could have been another catastrophe. So those incidents this week drove home the importance of everything that Peter and I were just discussing about the very real dangers of putting thousands of new residents, over 1,200 new homes, along this already extremely perilous evacuation route.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
At the 24 reservoirs across San Diego County, a deluge of rain from recent storms has helped to restore water levels depleted by several years of drought. 10 reservoirs are now at 80% capacity or more, including Lake Turner, Dixon, Jennings, Murray, Olivenhine, Poway, Lower Otay, Miramar, San Vicente, and Lake Wolford. 4 remain below 25% capacity, Lake Ramona's Ramona, Cuyamaca, Sutherland, and Morena. Lake Morena, which was down below 3% after San Diego City water officials ordered it drained during the last drought to supply urban water needs, has more than tripled but remains low at 10%. Lake Barrett, which before the winter rains was below 10% capacity, is now nearly half full at 49.5%. Others measured ranged from a third to just over half, including Sweetwater, Lake Hodges, Red Mountain, El Capitan, San Dieguito, and Lake Henshaw. Altogether, our region's reservoirs are at over 58% capacity, according to the latest measurements posted by the county and city in mid to late May. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
A young child was attacked by a mountain lion in the Los Penasquitos Canyon Preserve. Witnesses told 10 News that the boy's father threw rocks to scare off the lion. The attack occurred just east of the waterfall on a popular hiking trail in broad daylight around 2:30 in the afternoon. The boy, who appeared to be about 4 years old, suffered head injuries but was conscious when transported by paramedics to a hospital. Authorities have since killed a lion in the park and will conduct DNA testing to confirm that it is the same lion that attacked the child. The incident occurred just 3 days after KUSI reported that a mountain lion in the same preserve had followed a man and his 12-year-old son along a trail. According to an account posted on Nextdoor, the father got off his bicycle and waved it over his head, shouting until the lion turned and ran off. Most mountain lions are elusive and avoid contact with people. The California Fish and Game Department advises that if you see a mountain lion, don't ever run away or turn your back to the lion, which triggers the lion's predator instinct and makes it likely to attack, believing you are prey. Do not curl up or play dead, as is advised to avoid bear attacks. Instead, wave your arms or a hiking stick over your head to look larger, open a jacket wide, and shout, and make as much noise as possible. If an animal acts aggressively, you can throw a rock or other object toward the lion. Bear spray can also be used to deter a mountain lion. The California Fish and Game Department's website reports that from 1996 to 2014, only 15 verified mountain lion attacks have been documented in California, of which 3 were fatal. Most victims survive cougar attacks, often by fighting back with sticks, rocks, bottles, or other items. If hiking in mountain lion territory, go with a buddy. If you have children, keep them close by, and if you do see a lion, be sure to pick up your child. Several thousand mountain lions, also known as cougars or pumas, are estimated to reside in California. Lions have large territories, and locally have been documented traveling over 100 miles in a matter of days. Sightings, while rare, have been pointed in urban neighborhoods as well as rural areas, forests, and parks. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fisteer.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
This is Danita Jinks with East County Magazine's People Power Report. 13-year-old Trevon Harris dreamed of becoming an NBA player. He played basketball with the Young Bulls, a recreational team in Lemon Grove. But on May 3rd, he slipped on gravel outside his home in Lemon Grove and fell into the path of a vehicle. suffering a fatal head injury. On June 1st, the Lemon Grove Improvement Council and coach Mark Horton will hold the first annual Trevon Harris 3-on-3 basketball tournament to honor Trevon's memory and set up a scholarship and endowment fund to help young athletes in the community achieve their dreams. The tournament is open to players ages 10 to 14. It will be held at the Lemon Grove Rec Center on June 1st, with check-in at 8 a.m. and games from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Teams are encouraged to sign up at trevonharris.eventbrite.com. In addition to basketball, there will be music, food, games, and more. This charity event will memorialize Trevon, who was taken too soon from his family and from our community, says Teresa Rosiak Prophet with the Lemon Grove Improvement Council. She adds that prizes will be awarded to players and funds raised will also help young people who can't afford to join a sport or buy sports equipment. She adds that organizers hope to make this annual event that will grow bigger every year. For more information, you can call Coach Mark Horton at 619-823-3754.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Jonathan Getz with the Green Scene Report. Forefront Power wants to build a 2.4 megawatt solar power plant on 17 acres of a 165-acre site on Lake Moreno Road. The site is near Hauser Canyon and Lake Moreno Village in Campo, a rural community in San Diego's East County. If approved, the Lake Morena Solar Project would be the first community solar plant approved for SDG&E's EcoShare program, which allows customers to buy renewable energy directly from a local renewable energy developer. But over 300 Lake Morena residents have signed a petition opposing the project, and a Facebook page called Stop the Lake Morena Solar Plant has also been set up. The developer, Forefront Power, is a subsidiary of Mitsui and Company Limited, a global energy infrastructure company. According to the company's website, Forefront Power has developed over 800 megawatts of capacity through more than 1,000 energy projects. The push for industrial solar facilities in California has been fueled in part by a state mandate for all counties to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and encourage shifts towards clean energy technologies, such as solar and wind, instead of pollution-producing fossil fuels. While the goal of taking major steps to address climate change is worthy, there are substantial disagreements over just how that should be done. In San Diego's East County, multiple communities have been pushing back to object to industrializing the backcountry, arguing that solar instead should be situated on rooftops, parking lots, and in already urbanized or industrialized areas, not in rural communities and wetlands. Lake Morena residents say they want to keep their area rural and attractive as a destination for visitors to come to the lake for fishing, hiking, and camping. Concerns raised include the potential use of herbicides under solar panels that could leach into groundwater, disruption of wildlife corridors, glare off solar panels, reduction of values, and increased fire danger. Resident Claudia Miller-Bragg recalls that if a fire were to burn through Hauser Canyon, fueled by the area's frequent wind gusts, it could reach the solar plant, potentially releasing toxic fumes. The potential for higher fire insurance rates for neighboring property owners is also a concern.
Lighting up a cigarette, cigar, or vaping device is now illegal in Santee Parks, after the city joined all other cities in the region that have already outlawed smoking in public parks. Santee's City Council smoked out an exception, however, for designated smoking sections at special events at Town Center Community Park, including summer concerts and the city's annual Santee Salutes 4th of July festivities, as well as Fido Fest. The City Council voted 3-2 for the ban on all other smoking in public parks. Council members Stephen Houlihan and Laura Koval voted no, but only because they supported an even stronger ban on smoking all of the time in city parks, the San Diego Union-Tribune reports. The move comes after the city banned smoking on hiking trails earlier this year, but stopped short of prohibiting smoking in parks. But after public pressure, the council opted to restrict smoking in parks as well. Councilman Rob McNellis proposed an area near the parking lot for smokers to light up during concerts and other civic events to avoid criminalizing those who want to smoke during city-sponsored activities. Communities Against Substance Abuse, Santee Solutions, and others had advocated for a total ban, arguing that smoke cannot be contained in an outdoor venue, thus exposing others to health dangers from secondhand smoke. Gene Duffy with Santee Solutions told Fox 5, "It's a step in the right direction, a good step, but this could have been a more comprehensive ban." Reporting for East County Magazine in Santee, this is John Fistier.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Valerie Watts
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
June is filled with fun and festive events, including La Mesa's Flag Day Parade, the Trevon Harris Memorial Basketball Tournament in Lemon Grove, Lavender Days at Summers Past Farms, Night Fishing at Santee Lakes, the Bayou Brothers Concert at Santee Lakes, a tour of artist James Hubble's home in Julian, a Father's Day Pit Barbecue in Santa Isabel, a pancake breakfast with firefighters in La Mesa, Fido Fest in Santee, Race Amity Day in Lemon Grove, and the Anamar Arts Festival in Ramona.
Plus, we'll have a preview of some all-summer-long events, including outdoor concerts in La Mesa, Lemon Grove, El Cajon, and Santee, classic cruise nights in El Cajon and La Mesa, as well as outdoor movies across East County.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
La Mesa's 22nd Annual Flag Day Parade will roll out along La Mesa Boulevard in downtown La Mesa on June 1st, starting at 10 a.m. Don your patriotic garb to come cheer on floats, equestrians, and more at the Star-Spangled Celebration. This year's Grand Marshal will be Willie O'Ree from the San Diego Gulls. Ice cream will be provided at the lookout at Legacy Park while supplies last.
13-year-old Trevon Harris dreamed of becoming an NBA player, and he played basketball with the Young Bulls, a recreational team in Lemon Grove. But on May 3rd, he slipped on gravel outside his home and fell into the path of a vehicle, suffering a fatal head injury. On June 1st, the Lemon Grove Improvement Council and Coach Mark Horton will hold the first annual Trevon Harris 3-on-3 basketball tournament for players ages 10 to 14 at the Lemon Grove Rec Center in his memory. Funds raised will establish a scholarship and endowment fund to help other young athletes in the community with sports needs, such as those who can't afford to join a sports team or who need equipment. Organizers hope to make this an annual event. Teams are encouraged to sign up at trevon-harris.eventbrite.com. There will also be music, food, games, and more. Check-in is at 8 a.m. on June 1st with games from 9 to 2. For more information, you can call Coach Horton at 619-823-3754.
Summers Past Farms in Flynn Springs invites you to come celebrate the fragrance and beauty of lavender at a lavender festival and antique fair on Saturday, June 8th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. You can fill your garden and containers with many types of lavender during a plant sale. Shop for lavender gifts such as soap, candles, salves, and sprays, and enjoy the fragrant scent of the Old South of France. Over 40 fine craftsmen and expert artisans will also be at this event, offering crafts, collectibles, and antiques, as well as a garden sale. You can picnic in a pavilion or on the grass while listening to live music by Jim Earp. And remember to wear lavender. For information and directions, you can visit summerspastfarms.com.
Heartland firefighters will be flipping pancakes at a pancake breakfast fundraiser on Saturday, June 8th from 8 a.m. to noon at the downtown La Mesa Fire Station on Allison Avenue. Breakfast includes pancakes, eggs, sausages, coffee, and orange juice. Funds will be donated to benefit the Heartland Fire Explorers program. Tickets can be purchased at the door the day of the breakfast. This year's event will also feature emergency preparedness training in CPR, first aid, fire extinguishers, and crime prevention.
The City of Santee will host Fido Fest on June 8th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Town Center Community Park East. This event will feature dog adoptions, exhibits, giveaways, live entertainment, vaccinations, demos, and contests including best dog owner lookalikes, smallest and largest dogs, best trick, and a doggy cakewalk. Full details are available at the City of Santee's website on the calendar.
The Race Amity Committee of Lemon Grove will sponsor a Race Amity Day potluck picnic on June 9th from noon to 4 p.m. in Berry Street Park. Attendees are asked to bring a dish to share. The park offers free parking and is handicapped accessible. All are welcome. An hour-long documentary, An American Story, Race Amity, and the Other Tradition will be shown the day before the picnic on Saturday, June 8th at 2 p.m. at the Lemon Grove Library Community Room. Race Amity Day started in Massachusetts to celebrate diversity and encourage friendship, civility, kindness, and respect among all people, and efforts are underway to create a national designation. For more information on Race Amity Day here in Lemon Grove, you can call Mike Lavich at 619-851-4689.
You're invited to bring a lantern and drop a line for night fishing under the stars at Santee Lakes. On June 13th and June 27th from 5 p.m. to 11:30 p.m., find directions at SanteeLakes.com.
The Bayou Brothers will present a rollicking concert complete with Cajun, Zydeco, and blues music at Santee Lakes on Saturday, June 15th at 7 p.m. Guests can enjoy the sounds of New Orleans and the Louisiana bayous. You can find directions to Santee Lakes at SanteeLakes.com.
Renowned San Diego artist and humanitarian James Hubble is opening his hand-built Artistic Mountain Retreat Home to the public for the annual Father's Day Tour benefiting the Elan Lyle Foundation, Sunday, June 16th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. in Julian, California. For more than 50 years, the Hubbles have been building their art-inspired home, and guests are invited to tour the iconic property's eight main structures, including the art studios, the famous Boys House, the chapel, plus the first-ever chance to explore the near-completed Elan Lyle Center, complete with gallery, amphitheater, and more. James Hubble, his wife Anne, and their family will also be greeting the public to share their inspirational stories and insights about the property, which has been largely rebuilt after the Cedar Fire. The annual tour raises funds to continue to perpetuate Hubble's artistic mission through the Elan Lyle Foundation. There are two tour times on June 16th at 10 a.m. and 1 p.m. Each tour lasts 3 hours. For tickets, you can visit elonlylefoundation.org/open-house.
You're invited to bring Dad to a Father's Day pit barbecue on June 16th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the historic 200-year-old Santa Isabel Indian Mission. Contests will be held for best cowboy hats, boots, and mustaches. There will also be entertainment, vendors, a raffle, barbecue, beer, wine, and sodas. Tickets will be sold at the door.
You're invited to explore what it means to be creative at the Animar Festival on June 29th from 12 noon to 8 p.m. in Ramona. Animar is organized by two nonprofits, the To Create Gallery and the Art Center of Ramona. The event is located at the scenic Beegent Ranch, surrounded by the Ramona grasslands. Attendees can meet art collaborators who will offer a variety of hands-on activities, including an art apothecary store, body painting, stargazing, rock painting, a karate robot, permaculture, wire bending and fused glass, a banjo sing-along, yoga, meditation, and more. Tickets are available at animarfestival.com.
Now for some all-summer-long events.
The City of La Mesa's Sundays at 6 concert series will be held at Harry Griffin Park in the Outdoor Amphitheater each Sunday evening at 6 p.m. The series opens June 16th with the band Trails and Rails. Other June concerts include the San Diego Concert Band on June 23rd and It's Never Too Late on June 30th. The series will continue through July 28th. Find more information on the City of La Mesa's website.
The La Mesa Village Association rolls out its La Mesa Classic Car Show each Thursday from 5 to 8 p.m. starting June 6th and running through August 29th, although there will be no show over the 4th of July weekend. This event features pre-1974 cars, trucks, and vans. The event will feature DJs and live bands located at La Mesa Boulevard and 3rd, and an award giveaway at each event honors the night's best cars. Opening night on June 6th features live music by Four Way Street. Other June classic car show happenings in La Mesa include Barona drag racing cars, live music from the Flipside Burners, and the Shelby Ford Classic Car Club Night. You can find full details at LaMesaVillageAssociation.org.
Grab your popcorn. It's time for summertime movies at the outdoor roller skating rink at Viejas Outlet Shopping Mall in Alpine. Showtimes start at 7:30 p.m. each Friday night from now through early July. The lineup of popular movies coming up in June include Moana, Bumblebee, Ant-Man and the Wasp, and Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. There will also be showings over the 4th of July weekend of Star Wars The Force Awakens and How to Train Your Dragon. For a full schedule, visit viejas.com.
Lemon Grove's Summer Concert Series opens June 27th and continues through August 22nd each Thursday night from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at Berry Park. The series kicks off June 27th with mariachi music, followed by a season that will also include salsa, Cajun Zydeco, rock and roll, Motown, country music, and more. Check the City of Lemon Grove's website calendar for the complete schedule.
Santee opens its summer concert series on June 13th with Elvis impersonator James Crook and the Big Boss Men. The concert series will be held from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at Town Center Community Park East on Thursday nights all summer long through August 22nd. The City of Santee has the full lineup of artists on their website.
El Cajon's popular movies in the park return by popular demand this summer. You can enjoy 9 movies from June through August at parks across the city. The first two in the lineup are Teen Titans Go on Saturday, June 22nd at Hillside Park and The Avengers Infinity War on Friday, June 28th at Wells Park. Guests can enjoy additional fun activities before the start of each movie at nightfall. For a full list of shows all summer long, you can visit elcajonrec.org.
El Cajon's popular dinner and a concert series is held each Friday evening at Prescott Promenade in downtown El Cajon from 6 to 8 p.m. Shows will continue all summer long. You can bring a picnic dinner or dine early at one of the many restaurants nearby before attending the concert. For full details, visit downtownelcajon.com.
El Cajon's Classic Cruise Nights is celebrating its centennial season. You can view classic cars each Wednesday from 5 to 8 p.m. along Main Street in the heart of downtown El Cajon. For a full schedule of events, you can visit downtownelcajon.com.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more in the calendar and events section at our website, eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar or you'd like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show here on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back soon with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around East County.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Viejas Casino in Alpine is hosting a blood drive in partnership with the San Diego Blood Bank on Tuesday, June 11th, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. The drive will take place in the casino's Sycamore Room. Anyone 17 and older who weighs at least 114 pounds and is in good health may be eligible to donate blood. A good meal and plenty of fluids are recommended prior to donation. All donors must show picture identification. Donors are encouraged to schedule an appointment to donate, but walk-ins are welcome. To schedule an appointment or for more information, visit sandiegobloodbank.org. Or call 1-800-469-7322. That's 1-800-469-7322. Reporting in Alpine, this is John Fistier.
Lemon Grove Mayor Raquel Vasquez has issued a proclamation designating June 9th as Race Amity Day in Lemon Grove. The mayor urges all residents to join in support of the goals and ideals for racial amity, which means friendship and peaceful harmony. Vasquez Our region's first African-American mayor encourages residents to observe the day with appropriate ceremonies and activities. The Race Amity Committee of Lemon Grove will sponsor a Race Amity Day potluck picnic on June 9th from 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. in Berry Street Park. Attendees are asked to bring a dish to share and all are welcome. An hour-long documentary, An American Story, Race, Amity, and the Other Tradition, which aired earlier this year on KPBS, will be shown the day before the picnic on Saturday, June 8th at 2 p.m. at the Lemon Grove Library Community Room with a discussion to follow. These events were inspired by efforts of the National Center for Race Amity at Wheelock College in Boston. The Massachusetts legislature was the first to pass a Race Amity Day bill in 2016, designating the second Sunday in June as Massachusetts Race Amity Day to celebrate diversity and to encourage friendship, civility, kindness, and respect among all people. The National Center for Race Amity and its allies are calling on Congress for a joint resolution to establish the second Sunday in June of each year as a time for Americans to reflect and affirm the, quote, dignity of the diverse racial, cultural, and religious backgrounds of the human mosaic that constitutes the United States of America. Reporting for East County Magazine in Lemon Grove, this is Danita Jinks.
The Anza Borrego Foundation is looking for volunteers to help count sheep. No, not at bedtime, but over the 4th of July weekend for the 49th annual Bighorn Sheep Count in the Anza Borrego Desert State Park. There's also a mandatory orientation session on June 22nd. Temperatures can be in triple digits, but the rewards are priceless. Seeing these magnificent animals in their rugged terrain, as well as helping to document their numbers and preserve this iconic species. Borrego is Spanish for sheep. There are only about 900 Peninsular Desert Bighorn sheep left, including about 500 in Anza Borrego Desert State Park. You can sign up to be a sheep counter on the Anza Borrego Foundation website, theabf.org, by clicking on the calendar for the 4th of July weekend to find the RSVP form. Backpackers and four-wheel drive vehicles are also needed to bring volunteers to the count sites. And again, that website is theabf.org. Reporting for East County Magazine in Borrego Springs, this is Miriam Raftery.
When a juvenile is accused of a crime, making him or her face the victim, take responsibility, and make amends works better than prosecution and jail time, according to a new report. The Oakland area adopted a restorative justice approach 9 years ago, and in just the first 2 years, they diverted 102 youth from the criminal justice system, giving them a second chance to get back on track. Jenna Kress is with the group Community Works West, which administers the program in Alameda County. She notes that kids who took part were almost 44% less likely to commit another crime within 12 months.
Showed an 18.4% recidivism rate in Alameda County, where the traditional juvenile legal system showed a 32.1% recidivism rate with the control group.
The process works like this. If the DA and the victim agree, the youth accused of a crime goes through a restorative justice program and takes responsibility for the crime. He or she will often face the victim, apologize, and agree to make amends, perhaps by going through an anger management program, paying the victim back in the case of a theft, or performing community service. If successful, the charges are dropped. Sia Henry is with the nonprofit Impact Justice, which has worked with community groups, police, the DA, and probation in Contra Costa, Alameda, San Francisco, and Los Angeles counties to implement this approach. She says the current system is unfair to youth of color, leaving a disproportionate number behind bars or expelled from school.
It's a great alternative to suspensions and expulsions and a great way to lead to police-free schools.
The report also found that victims have a 91% satisfaction rate with the program and noted a huge cost savings. For example, the Restorative Community Conference program in Oakland averages about $4,500 per case, whereas probation in Alameda County costs, on average, $23,000 per year. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
La Mesa's Farmers Market has been serving the community for over 20 years, but it may soon end August 1st unless a new operator is found. For years, the market operated on Allison Street, a block off La Mesa Boulevard. Later, it moved to a parking lot on Spring Street near City Hall at the city's Civic Center before moving to the heart of the downtown village in May last year. While most residents and businesses surveyed have voiced support for keeping the market downtown on Fridays, according to a staff report, some business owners have complained that shutting down streets on Friday afternoons and early evening and allowing hot food vendors at the market have negatively impacted their sales. Frustrated by a lack of compromise by the La Mesa Village Association to address those concerns, the City Council has voted unanimously to end its contract with the Merchants Group to run the market. The city is putting out a request for proposals from other operators to run the market and make improvements to heal the rift, potentially moving the market to a different location or a different day. If no entity comes forward, East County's longest-running farmers market could end after July 31st when the Merchant Group's contract runs out. The La Mesa Village Association's board rejected proposed compromises, contending that not enough farmers would be available any other day due to competing markets in other communities. The board also rejected proposals to reduce the number of hot food vendors, shorten the market's hours, or use market funds to promote village businesses outside of La Mesa to help them offset lost sales. A proposal to change the layout to make existing businesses more visible was also found unworkable due to lack of vehicle access. Pete Satterwood, president of the La Mesa Village Merchants Association, told the council his group fully supports keeping the market where it is and when it is, calling it a good thing for the village. Market revenues help the association fund other community events, he notes, such as Oktoberfest and the annual Holiday in the Village Festival, and it's unclear if those events can continue without the farmers market funding. Councilwoman Christina Licio introduced the motion to end the market and seek bids for a new operator. Councilman Bill Baber called the merchant group's refusal to compromise, quote, a Waterloo moment. Councilman Colin Parent offered a substitute motion, but it failed. His plan would have kept the market downtown, but mandated some compromises. A plan supported by Mayor Marco Rapostathis, who asked that a shuttle service be required and that hot food vendors be banned completely to avoid hurting local restaurants. East County has already lost a farmer's market in downtown El Cajon that failed due to insufficient sales, as well as a farmer's market formerly operating at Cuyamaca College. According to the County Farm Bureau website, the only other farmer's markets in East County are in Santee on Wednesdays, Lemon Grove on Thursdays, Santa Isabel on Saturdays, and Borrego Springs on Fridays. You can find details on these at sdfarmbureau.org in the Shop Local section. There's also a farmer's market at San Diego State University on Thursdays with details at eatatsdsu.com. Now, anybody interested in bidding to run the La Mesa Farmer's Market can register to submit a proposal through the website Planet Bids. Reporting for East County Magazine in La Mesa, this is Miriam Raftery.
In the good old summertime, in the good old summertime, strolling through the shady lanes with your baby mine, you hold her hand and she holds yours, and that's a very good sign that she's your tootsie wootsie in the good old summertime.
This is a public service announcement from the County of San Diego. As temperatures climb, it's important to stay cool. Seniors and those without air conditioning are particularly vulnerable to heat-related illness. The county has provided a list of cool zones where you can beat the heat, including places in East County, such as libraries and senior centers. All are free and open to the public during designated hours. You can find a list of school zones in your area at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
This is Miriam Raftery with the Health Alert. Over 62,000 pounds of raw beef products have been recalled, the U.S. Department of Agriculture has announced. The meats may be contaminated with E. coli, a dangerous bacteria that can cause abdominal discomfort, dehydration, and in some cases, kidney failure or death. So before you throw steaks or burgers on the barbecue, check the labels first, or maybe choose chicken or veggie burgers instead. The recalled products include many different cuts of beef. They were packed by Aurora Packing Company in Illinois and sold nationwide for distribution and processing. All the raw beef products were packaged on April 19th, and they have the code EST788 inside the USDA mark of inspection. The problem was discovered in sample testing by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, though as of our show deadline, no illnesses have yet been reported. But health officials are concerned that packages of the tainted meat may be in refrigerators or freezers in homes or institutional settings. Symptoms may appear between 2 and 8 days after exposure, and while most people recover, young children and older adults may suffer kidney failure. Now, the symptoms of a severe problem are detected by paleness, low urine output, and bruising. If you have these symptoms, you should seek immediate emergency medical care. And if you have any of these products, don't eat them. Return the recalled beef to the store for a refund or throw them away.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Our independent radio station, KNSJ, was launched on the 4th of July. Since then, KNSJ has added new local and syndicated programs. Now, we're working to build our news and investigative journalism team to bring you the many important stories you won't hear anywhere else. Stories that impact you, your family, your community, and our nation. Please donate to support KNSJ News at www.knsj.org. That's www.knsj.org.
This is John Fisteer with a health alert. The San Diego County Health and Human Services Agency is urging travelers heading outside of the U.S. to get the measles vaccine. A lot of media attention has been focused on the outbreak and cases being reported in Los Angeles and Orange counties. But Dr. Eric McDonald, medical director of HHSA's Epidemiology and Immunization Branch, says that locally there may be a higher risk of measles coming into San Diego from a traveler to a country with a measles outbreak. San Diego hasn't had a measles case since 2017, and health officials hope to keep it that way. McDonald says the majority of recent cases in Southern California are being diagnosed in under-vaccinated people who were exposed to measles overseas, returned with the virus, and then spread it to close contacts who are not immune. If you've traveled overseas and are now experiencing measles symptoms, such as a high fever or rash, call your doctor before seeking medical attention to avoid exposing others. If you're planning overseas travel, be sure you're up to date with your immunizations, Dr. McDonald advises. That includes 2 doses of the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine. Measles is a highly contagious virus that spreads through the air by coughing or sneezing. Measles virus can live for up to 2 hours in the airspace where the infected person coughed or sneezed. Measles is so contagious that if one person has it, up to 90% of the people close to that person who are not immune will also become infected. Symptoms of measles include a high fever over 101 degrees, runny nose, red watery eyes, cough, and a rash that starts on the face and spreads to the rest of the body. 2 doses of MMR vaccine are about 97% effective at preventing measles. 1 dose is about 93% effective. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention warns that people born in the United States between 1957 and 1963 may need to get a booster vaccine because an earlier version of the vaccine was less effective and people may have had only one vaccination. You can call your doctor to get a measles vaccine, which may be covered by your insurance. You may also be vaccinated at a pharmacy or at a clinic offering no or low-cost vaccinations. If you don't have insurance, you can call 211 or visit www.sdiz.org to find a nearby clinic.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Kevin McLeod, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.